America has been shocked by a series of probably coordinated terrorist attacks as the nation begins the new year. And China has been quietly making some dramatic moves in what some are calling the biggest arms buildup since the 1930s. We're going to look at all this and more on today's Trumpet World. Hello and welcome to Trumpet World. Thank you so much, especially to those of you that are joining us live on YouTube and on Rumble. We have our regular panel here today, and the big news this week is the car ramming and possibly connected bombing in the United States. And so to give us an overview of what has been happening this week there and what the latest is in terms of evidence, who it looks like is behind this, we'll get an update from our US correspondent, Andrew Miller.
One of them had an Army officer from Fort Bragg, or maybe former Army officer, ram a car into a crowd of people in New Orleans, killing at least 15 and injuring 35 others. I believe Joe Biden has come out and finally confirmed that he is believed to have strong connections to the Islamic State. So an Islamic terrorist, but an Islamic terrorist who seems to have had some domestic support. Like I said, he was an Army officer at Fort Bragg, which is an interesting coincidence, or maybe not a coincidence, because the other big terrorist attack in America this week is another Army officer at Fort Bragg who strapped himself with explosives, drove a Cybertruck up to the Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas, and tried to blow up the car. Now, he ended up picking probably one of the worst cars you could do for that type of terrorist attack. The Cybertruck was designed to contain explosions, so he ended up killing himself and injuring seven others. But there was no damage done to the building just because of the way the truck was built. But you've got these two attacks, one from the Islamic State in New Orleans, one by just an Army officer, apparently against Donald Trump, or at least Donald Trump's properties in New Orleans. But it is just interesting that they're both from Army officers from Fort Bragg. There's no official word out yet. There's still a lot we don't know as to whether they actually knew each other. But Tim Roth, actually, who tried to shoot Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago last summer, also at least visited Fort Bragg many times. So there's a number of people wondering what's going on at Fort Bragg right now, because they've that name showed up three different times in three different terrorist attacks over the past year or so.
Now, you know, Fort Bragg, I guess that's one commonality, but the big thing I think that everyone's looking at is the Islamic State flag and the fact that here is another Muslim terrorist attack happening within the United States. And Melanie Phillips had a great article that just came out today on this called America's Islamist Problem. And, you know, she connected some of this to the border, but she also talked about, well, she said, just as in Britain and elsewhere in the West, a curious state of denial and amnesia has afflicted America every time an Islamist attack takes place. And she goes through and lists all of these different attacks that we've seen. She also says, for years now, America has told itself that Islamic terrorism is a European problem, particularly when it comes to homegrown Islamists. Now Americans have been brought up against the hard evidence that this is their problem as well. Like, this is a problem that Europe obviously has imported. Europe is closer to the Middle East. There have been large numbers of Muslims coming into these countries. They've caused problems here. I mean, Britain's grooming gangs are very much in the news, and I might bring that into this story in just a minute. But this is a reminder that this can be a problem for the United States as well, and that they too have imported some of these same dangers.
Right, and I've definitely been hearing a lot of talk amongst, especially the Make America Great Again movement, on X and other social media platforms, just pointing out that Islamic terrorism is an import to America. Like I said, we don't share a border with the Middle East, so these terrorists have come into America, at least the Arab ones, as the result of mass immigration over the past several decades. And so that is just really a sobering wake-up call, that the fact that this is terrorism is something that it's happened here before with the 9/11 terrorist attacks and others, but now to actually have someone pledging allegiance to the Islamic State, which is in Syria and the greater Levant region, actually conducting attacks in New Orleans, so is that there's definitely even a serious border security problem in addition to some of the homegrown aspects of these terrorist attacks, which is one of the curses prophesied to come on a nation that disobeys God in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, saying that I will even appoint over you terror. So terrorist attacks like these, that they really make people afraid, because, I mean, you're just seeing like a Cybertruck blow up that you weren't expecting to in a city in the middle of Nevada, or a terrorist pledging allegiance to a Middle Eastern power, killing 15 people in the middle of New Orleans. This is a organized terror campaign, maybe organized from a couple different fronts, that America has to deal with, and that was prophesied.
That point that you made about cause and effect, there is a cause for this, is an important one to make. This is a clip from a Key of David program that Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry gave 20 years ago called Destroying Terrorism. We can play that now quickly. It's clip 6.
And Daniel says, that's why we brought these curses upon us like terrorism, that there's a cause and effect. And God, by allowing this terrorism to come upon us, is sending a message through that violence that something is not right in Israel. What is it? Well, he's telling us what the cause and the effect, and why we have all these curses, division in our nation, and family dysfunction and collapse, terrorism, crime, drugs, what have you. It's all cause and effect. God deals with cause and effect, and that's really the heart of true education. Cause and effect.
So we need to understand the causes of these attacks, and I think this is something that we don't like to discuss, because you get back to cause and effect, and it's there are laws that cause blessings, that cause good things to happen. And those laws apply regardless of who you are, of what background you're from. They are completely equal opportunity, I guess you could say, to use that language. But they come from the Bible. And as close as you get to those laws, the better things that you're going to experience. And you look at what comes in from the Western tradition, and especially, say, the United States Constitution, or a lot of things that you get even from Britain's heritage, like Magna Carta, well, they're rule of law, equality before the law. And these things, whether we realize it or not, are things that come from the Bible. This is something even secular experts have recognized. I think it was David Landers or Derek Landers. He had a book analyzing why nations are rich, and he talked about, well, where does this idea of property rights come from? And the ruler can't just do whatever he likes. It comes from the Bible. You go back, and the very first world leader, the very first kind of person leading a nation whose power is constrained by law, is Moses. And Moses is accused of behaving unjustly. And he says, well, whose donkey have I stolen? Like, he recognized, I am under the law. So that's just one very specific example, but there's a whole lot of others that come directly from the Bible. And other traditions that don't come from that, that disobey these biblical laws and reject them, will cause cursing. But this kind of fake diversity era that we live in doesn't want to criticize any other belief systems. And so it tries to ignore cause and effect. And we try to say, well, all belief systems and all religions are valid. And something like this problem of Islamist terrorism is something that just very directly confronts that. And all too often we ignore it. And I think this is a big part of the reason why you have the headlines. They're there, they're big in the news, but maybe for a day. And then we immediately look away, or we downplay the most important parts of this. Like, you know, the initial headlines about the Cybertruck exploding. If that was all you had to go on, you would believe that this was Elon Musk's vehicle that spontaneously combusted. I remember reading an article well after we knew what was going on in the Associated Press, and they didn't report the New Orleans terrorist, you know, Shamshed Dinjaba. They did not report his name. And I'm sure they had some kind of journalistic integrity, high-sounding reasoning for that. But the reason is it's because it's a Muslim name. It's an Arabic name. They don't want people to draw those conclusions. And the other kind of the big story that's blown up in the UK this week has been this Muslim grooming gang scandal, which if you've been on Twitter, you will have seen, I'm sure, material on this, where years going back many, many years, you have had thousands of girls who have been raped horribly. Like, some of the things on Twitter have been people putting screenshots from the police reports, and they are hideously graphic of what people have done to these girls. And there has been a massive reluctance to talk about this. Now, sometimes people say, well, this isn't reported, and then others come back and say, well, it was on the front page of the Times in 2014. And kind of like, well, yeah, it was, but we didn't do anything. It was the nation kind of immediately ignored it. Governments didn't take any action. There was this immediate, even that was kind of, it was established fact that this was a problem within, they were called Pakistani or Asian, like Asian is, it's a horrible euphemism. It is Muslim grooming gangs. They're called Asian to try and mask that fact. And, you know, it's not Chinese people doing this. It's not Japanese people doing this. It's not Hindus from India that, like, it's very specific that are massively overrepresented in these kind of crimes. But this starts to ask questions about an entire belief system. And you start to dwell into the details. Melanie Phillips's article, she talks about 52% of British Muslims want to make it illegal to display a picture of Islam's founder, Muhammad. Almost half say Jews have too much power over the government. One third want Sharia law, and one third want to declare Islam as the national religion. She quotes a Heritage Foundation poll. 40% of American Muslims say Hamas did not commit murder and rape in Israel on October 7th. 43% of American Muslims say Israel does not have a right to exist as a Jewish homeland. You look at some of these statistics from Rotherham, like in one town, about 1 in 70 of the Muslim men in this town had sexually assaulted, had raped a teenage girl. Like, mind-blowing levels of just evil. And for, like, there's a cause. There is a belief system that has some horrible things in it. And we will not call it out. And we don't talk about it because we elevate this kind of idea of tolerance and tolerating all belief systems above everything else. And we won't talk about Islam. And I mean, that says something about Islam. It says a lot about our society too, though, that we would value our own kind of tolerance. We put this, our ideals of tolerance, ahead of protecting innocent girls. Like, in what world is not offending the feelings of Muslims more important than protecting innocent girls? But that is the view of just about all in the mainstream. And I think part of the reason why it all kicked off on Twitter this week is that there was calls to have an inquiry into one of these places. And the government, that talks a lot about safeguarding women and girls, said, no, we don't want an inquiry here. We don't want a public inquiry here. And time after time, it has been covered up. I mean, I don't know if you have any similar perspective, Andrew, and what's seeing, I'm sure you've seen this story in the UK from the US, or what is happening in the US, people just not wanting to talk about this.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, I've seen both stories, and I think this this problems of just like trying to ignore the elephant in the room, it definitely exists in both the United States and the United Kingdom. I think the problem is further developed in the United Kingdom. Here, like I said, even in the United States, even it took him a while, it took him longer than it should have. But like I said, even Joe Biden came out and announced to the nation that, like, yes, this man has ties to the Islamic State. Most of the reporting I've read didn't dwell much on his Islamic connections, but at least gave us the Islamic-sounding name. Now, there are a number of people who are disturbed with the other story, like you mentioned about the... I think all the Reuters and AP headlines were saying that, like, oh, Cybertruck explodes in front of Trump Hotel, as if there was a malfunction in the Cybertruck and not the fact that it exploded because there was a guy strapped with a bunch of bombs in it. And I think that actually gets to a similar blindness in American politics, not necessarily that they were... concern that this guy in Las Vegas was Islamic, but because it was in front of a Trump hotel, they didn't want to make it sound like there was any plots to assassinate Donald Trump, which there have been at least two high-profile ones in the past year. And so in the same way that they will often cover up Islamic terrorist attacks by not telling them their name or not telling them their religious affiliation, because the knee-jerk reaction is like, oh, was this a third attack on Trump or his family or his property? So they just like, oh, well, the Cybertruck blew up, which, like, yes, it did, because there was a guy strapped with a bunch of bombs in front, not due to any technical glitch. But it is a similar spirit behind it, this same campaign that wants to pretend like diversity is our strength, multiculturalism is a good thing. We need to cover up any problems with Islamic immigrants, even if that means putting women and girls in harm's danger, is also telling us that the Donald Trump is the main problem with America. He's racist for even bringing up some of these concerns about immigration. There is no organized campaign against him. And if a Cybertruck blows up in front of his hotel, well, then... the headline reads, Cybertruck blows up, not deranged terrorist straps himself with bombs and detonates himself in front of Trump Hotel.
I think another aspect of this story that's worth talking about is this, you know, the Isaiah 1 says the whole head is sick. And it talks about, you know, there's sickness throughout all levels of our government, all decision makers. And I mean, seeing this in the United States, it kind of drove home more to me, okay, Donald Trump is coming back, but there's still a lot of, like, there's a lot of sickness. There's a lot to still be sorted out. And so you kind of had this farce even in the United States, the way that, was it the mayor of New Orleans who came out and said, this is a terrorist attack? And then they had their diversity hire, who was head of the FBI, who said immediately afterwards, this is not a terrorist attack. I think that was Wednesday morning. I was trying to get the trumpet brief out. It was kind of like it needed to go out the door. I was just like, I don't have time to try and figure out who is right and who is wrong. I'm just going to have to state the fact. She said it's terrorism. She said it's not. Next day, it's very clear this FBI individual is kind of a useless diversity hire and either malice or just ignorance or whatever. She was trying to deny that it was a terrorist attack. And then you look at the United Kingdom and this grooming scandal, like, there is deep sickness at every single level. And again, I've been looking over this morning articles I was writing about this 10 years ago. For this to just be a problem, and we get every few years another, like, another big city. It was Rotherham, and then I think there was Oxford, and there was Oldham. Like, again and again and again, there'd be these different towns. And each year, you'd get another town, and nothing's been done. But then you look at what these have come out with, and the sickness that is there in, say, the local police. Like, where the girls would be blamed. they'd be 13-year-old girls being gang raped by Pakistani Muslims, and they'd say, well, they'd kind of say it's the girls' fault. At one point, I remember this from when I was writing on this years ago, at one point these men kind of got the girls drunk and then raped them, and the police were called, and they came along and they arrested the girls for being drunk and disorderly and just left the men. And then even social workers kind of treated it as, well, this is their choice. This is a lifestyle choice. Who are we to judge? They have chosen to be doing this. And then you have family breakdown. A lot of the victims were people that were from in homes because they were from completely broken families. Not all, certainly not all. But you know, there's sickness at so many different levels of society. And again, getting back to cause and effect, you have a lot of different sicknesses at different levels of society that cause this to happen.
No, that is a good point. And I'm actually reminded of a similar story in America about a year ago where the state of California tried to enact some new legislation that would make the penalty for sexually abusing a minor more stringent and came up against a lot of opposition. I actually, in hindsight, I don't think the measure passed because a number of lawmakers in California pointed out that such a measure would disproportionately affect homosexuals, saying that like if you criminalize the sexual abuse of minors, that homosexuals commit those types of crimes more often than heterosexuals commit those types of crimes. Therefore, that law would discriminate against homosexuals. So again, it's very similar to the way the British were talking about the grooming gangs. It's like they actually put the DEI diversity of like, we don't want to do anything that's going to cast the homosexual community in a bad light above the protection of children. And that same law, actually, if you were to look at the statistics in California, I haven't heard that the grooming gangs there are nearly as bad in Britain, but a law like that would probably disproportionately affect Islamic Californians as well. And so you're definitely seeing something similar to like the DEI guy in Los Angeles who says, well, we don't want to say it's terrorist attack because that will make Muslims look bad. The idea that the protecting these racial or sexual minorities has become such a priority for these sick government officials that they give the criminal more rights than the victim.
You are just trying to get me kicked off YouTube today. Because you're right. Like, this is it's the same heresy, if I can put it that way. That, like, you remember the case of the Zuckluks. This was in the news a week or two ago, and it was in the from a year or so ago. It's this two married, in the eyes of the state, men who would adopt boys and then rape them. And they were just recently jailed for life. But there is a problem with that. Within, like, homosexuality, God calls it a perversion for a reason. And I wrote a whole article on this, modern-day child sacrifice, in August 2023. Like, you look at that background, and yeah, there is something deeply wrong with that lifestyle. The fruit show it. And that lifestyle has led to attacks on children. And again, we don't stand up for the children, and instead we preach tolerance. Like, that is our God. That is what we worship, and that's what we do ahead of protecting the innocents. And this really stands out to me. When you read, you know, we talk a lot on this show about, you know, the Bible prophecies in Amos, Bible prophecies in Hosea, these key prophecies that describe in detail the modern prophetic events that happen in the United States and Britain right now. But when you just turn to those books and read them, one of the big things that comes across is God's anger. And one of the things he's very angry about, and he says again and again, is our failure to defend the innocent and our failure to protect those that need protecting. And the poor are taken advantage of, it talks about in there. And, you know, we don't protect children. We don't, like, it's that God is rightfully, you know, well, it's God, he's always rightfully, but God is wrathful about this. And that's what you see all across here. Now, of course, that does bring up this, there is a real spiritual dimension to this conflict as well. And you're seeing more and more of this evil and more of these attacks against civilians and innocents because there's a real spirit world and Satan the devil is behind it. This is another thing. Well, this is from a Key of David also, this is 21 years ago now from Mr. Flurry, called Invisible Terrorists. And this is a point he made there.
Terrorism is plaguing this world. And yet, we don't understand how to stop it. And we're never going to understand how to stop it unless we can understand about the hidden terrorists or the invisible terrorists. Your Bible says that those hidden terrorists are far worse than the ones that you can see with your physical eyes. They're far worse. And if we can understand those invisible terrorists, we can understand why that terrorism today is some three times at least worse than it's ever been on this earth. We can understand that. It is very clear in your Bible.
I mean, with the events of this week, I've been going back to some of our coverage back when we were writing more about Islamist terrorism. This is an article I went back to for December 2004, Ugly Truths About Islamic Terrorism by Trumpet Managing Editor Joel Hilliker. And here, Mr. Hilliker writes, well, he talks about, you know, our refusal to talk about this, our refusal to focus on the problem. And he says, such naivety is appallingly dangerous. It virtually guarantees that Islamic terrorism will become the single most shockingly destructive force in the world in the near term. We must face this issue squarely. Wishful thinking, political correctness, careless assumptions, unfounded emotions, all these obscure the truth. Looking at the observable facts with unblinking honesty provides a chilling picture of nothing less than the early stages of another medieval religious crusade. But even more importantly, if we also sweep aside any prejudice against the unerring truth of the Bible, we can see far more accurately and even more terrifying view not only of the unseen cause of Islamic terrorism, but also of its future as we can expect it to unfold in the next few years. You know, this is about a satanic attack that God is allowing, and it's going to get worse. And it's going to get worse in Britain and America and weakening these nations. It's going to get worse in provoking Europe.
Yeah, absolutely true. I was just reminded of an article we have, a reprint article from our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Flurry, titled Communism in America Today, which is primarily about the Obama administration and things were going on there. But he does have a quote in there. He said, well, of course there's an agenda and it's bad for America. It's time for Americans to wake up, or is it already too late? The prophet Hosea says that we allow ourselves to be mixed up with foreigners. Foreigners eat away at our strength unknown to him. That's in Hosea 7, verses 8 through 9 in the Moffat translation. Foreigners are eating away America's strength, and we don't even realize it because we have forsaken God. Now, the late Herbert W. Armstrong used that verse to prove that the communist infiltration of America was prophesied. Saying that, like, a lot of these ideas, Karl Marx was German, and like a lot of these socialist ideas, they originated in Germany and in Russia and were imported to the United States through mass immigration back in the 40s, 50s, 60s. In similar way to that, like, this new Islamic ideology is being imported by all the refugees from Afghanistan that Biden let here after the withdrawal. So in both cases, it's pointing to the fact that Americans not looking to the Bible like our founding fathers did for their base, but importing all these ideas from socialist ideas from Germany, socialist ideas from Russia, Islamist ideas from Arabia or Afghanistan, that's kind of made a toxic mix. That's given you both these problems. I mean, the Islamic grooming gangs are the result of Muslim immigration. but even the, like I said, the this idea of like protecting the rights of the homosexuals above the rights of the abusers. That concept doesn't come from the Bible. It comes, it's a socialist way of thinking that you look back in the 50s and 60s, and a lot of the communists who were writing about this were saying that, like, well, we actually need the homosexual movement to tear down the family, because once you don't have that family support base, you get more of a centralization of society. And I'm not saying every diversity hire now is quoting Wilhelm Reich or Herbert Marcuse when they think that. Sometimes they're just doing whatever they want to do. But the origin of that philosophy and way of thinking in America does trace back to socialist ideas that came to America figuring it's like, well, our culture is not good enough. Our Judeo-Christian foundations aren't good enough. What are they doing in Germany and Russia? And let's see if we can try to do that here.
Well, we've thrown out quite a few different bits of additional reading or articles. I'll leave one piece that you could go if you want to read on some of these deeper themes that we've been talking about more, and that is Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry's book, Character in Crisis, that, you know, this gets to, talks about, well, the biblical principles that are embedded in the foundations of Britain and America, and not everything about those foundations are good. Like, it's not a perfect society, and it doesn't, we don't, neither of our countries anywhere close to adhere perfectly to God's law. But where we have, where there are principles from the Bible, obeying those have led to blessings. And as we move away from that tradition and embrace these other traditions, we're moving away from that way of life that causes blessings. And Character in Crisis just, you know, talks about that, but also talks about the immorality at the top of both of our countries, the United States in particular, and what that does. I mean, but that analysis applies to any country. You start to be evil and immoral, and that has dire consequences for your country. And Britain and America have moved very quickly away from any biblical principles, and in many ways are leading the world in immorality. And that's why you see Britain and America hit with so many afflictions, because we're leading the world in a way that causes wrong thinking. Yeah, there's lots of other countries that have embraced multiculturalism and that have brought in other people and that embrace LGBT. But in very many ways, Britain and America are kind of the evangelists for these. And Canada, I think, if we're talking about multiculturalism, certainly, like, they're the ones that preach this on everyone else. And there are cursings that come from that. But there are blessings from going back to God's law. And those are blessings that anyone can experience by embracing that law, living it in their own life. Well, Simon is anxiously sitting next to me, looking at his watch every few minutes, worried that he's not going to get any time at all to talk about the Middle East, which is a very real possibility at the moment. So, you know, that was an important piece of news, though, I think, affecting all of us from the United States. But do you want to give a quick rundown of some of the other news from the United States this week, Andrew?
Yeah, well, we've talked about a number of sobering topics, so I'll give you three other news topics. One of them that's also sobering, and then actually two small pieces of good news, just to leave on a little more of a positive note. The sobering topic is that the Treasury Department has informed congressional lawmakers that they were the target of a major Chinese cyber attack. Where the Chinese got access to a number of documents and a cyber attack on American financial data, really just highlighting the vulnerability America has to computer warfare. And so a sobering thing we all need to be concerned about. On a more positive note, especially for any of our Canadian listeners who are worried about tariffs or things like that, the Shark Tank star Kevin O'Leary has announced that he really likes Trump's idea of making Canada the 51st state and wants to talk more about it. He says that it might take a while. He's like, there are issues to work out. But he said he does have a plan that he wants to present to Donald Trump to kind of make a free trade zone, which I guess in the long term, we saw how well that worked out for Greece and the European Union. But in the short term, that could actually bring Canada into the American economic resurgence that we've talked so much about being prophesied in the in the Bible, in 2 Kings 14, verses 26 through 28, and other places. And then for my one final story, one that I was particularly excited about, just because I've kept close tabs on the Twitter files Elon Musk was publishing, but in the wranglings over the government shutdown, they've actually finally let the Global Engagement Center go bankrupt. A lot of you probably haven't heard of that, but that was the main organ in the U.S. State Department that the government was using to censor speech and Twitter and other social media platforms. Actually, not just in America, but they had ties with other transatlantic think tanks that were censoring information in Europe. So those transatlantic think tanks are still active. They're still censoring information in Europe. But the fact that this Global Engagement Center has gone bankrupt is really good news that there may be more freedom of speech in America. So who knows? We might not get kicked off YouTube today after all.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll find out how big of an influence that news story is over the weekend. All right. Thank you for that, Andrew. Well, you mentioned China's hack of the United States. There's been quite a lot of news coming out of China that demonstrates the threat that they pose to the United States. And so Jeremiah Jacques has assembled a lot of that for us into a handy review.
Yes, that's right. I actually wanted to start off with a quote from Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flory. This is from a booklet that he wrote back in 2021. And he wrote, "The world is waking up to what a powerhouse China is becoming. Its economic maneuvers are vaulting it past the U.S. as the world's greatest economy. Its military is developing and attaining conquests throughout Asia and beyond. Its leaders clearly have the ambition to rule this world." End quote. So that's Mr. Gerald Flory. As I said there, it's actually the opening paragraph of his booklet called China's Dangerous Move Against America. And you can see that he really sounds the alarm there about the dark ambitions of the Chinese Communist Party. And I wanted to begin with that because the big story this week is just that those dark ambitions are on glaring display just about everywhere you look. So there was a new report in The Federalist that's all about China's unprecedented military buildup, which it says is clearly aimed at challenging America and its allies. This report is by Chuck DeVore, and he details the way China is expanding its nuclear and missile arsenals, and the way China already has the world's largest navy, if you go by number of ships. And in one part, he writes, quote, "Like Nazi Germany's buildup in the 1930s, the militarization program ordered by the Chinese Communist Party isn't simply a great power buildup. It's a weapon in service of a deadly ideology." End quote. So DeVore there is really getting to the heart of why China's military buildup is so worrying. And that is because Xi Jinping and the other leaders of the Chinese Communist Party, they want to use that rapidly expanding military might to impose their will on the whole world, really, the way that they're currently imposing it inside of China in extremely draconian and oppressive ways. You can look at the Tibetans in China, you can look at the Uyghurs, the Hong Kongers, even the Mongols. The Chinese Communist Party is using brute force to impose its will on all of these groups. And the Chinese Communist Party, of course, these are atheists. So in many cases, it is religious groups that they use force against, because to the Chinese Communist Party, there is no higher power in the universe than the Chinese Communist Party. And they want everyone to worship their party and the Chinese state as the highest power. And with the Chinese Communist Party's military power growing so quickly, they really aim to be able to impose their will that same way far beyond China's borders. And then in a related story, Xi Jinping rang in the new year saying no one will be able to stop China's planned annexation of Taiwan. He called it a reunification with Taiwan, but the Chinese Communist Party has never controlled that island. So it's inaccurate to call it a reunification. But whatever you want to call it, Xi Jinping remains hell-bent on conquering this sovereign democratic nation, and he says that no one will be able to stop him when he decides that it's time to make his move. So a very chilling New Year's speech there from Chairman Xi. And we also saw China go beyond words this week with that major hack on the U.S. Treasury Department. The Chinese hackers were able to use third-party software to override security measures and tap directly into the individual workstations of many Treasury Department employees. Now, we don't yet know what exactly they were able to access and what may come of this, but this is really only the latest in a nonstop campaign by the Chinese to hack every American system they can. And it's very worrying to think of the kinds of spying and blackmailing and coercion and just chaos that could result from these kinds of attacks. And then the last story that I wanted to mention, it may not sound as dramatic as, you know, a military buildup or seizing Taiwan or cyber attacks, but it is another alarming area where we can see the Chinese Communist Party's dark ambitions on display, and that is with forced technology transfers that steal advanced manufacturing technology. So China's been doing this for years. They will let a given Western company come inside of China and set up shop and tap into all of their cheap labor and even sell to their market of 1+ billion people. But then what China does over and over again is it uses that business arrangement to steal the intellectual property of that foreign company. And then the Chinese do some clever reverse engineering, and they start making the same basic car or phone or whatever it may be, but now it's made by a Chinese company. And then the government steps in and subsidizes that Chinese company so that it can sell at a loss. And then the original manufacturers, the foreign companies, they can't compete with that, and they get driven out of business by it. So this has happened with far too many companies to name. And The Hill had a very powerful article about it this week, focusing specifically on all the foreign car companies that this has happened to, and just how much this theft has enriched the Chinese and how much it has really battered a lot of other nations. So it's a disturbing practice. It is theft. And it's just one more area where we can see that China's leaders clearly have the ambition to rule this world and that there's little they won't do to achieve their dark objectives.
And this is something, I mean, you started with that quote from Trumpet editor-in-chief. I mean, even on that last point, this is what he said in a May 2000 Key of David program. Clip one.
China has tried ferociously to overtake the U.S. economy for years, and they've probably done so now. And also, they have driven to overtake our modern science, and they've tried very hard to surpass us in that area as well, because science has a lot to do with the quality of your economy and how strong it is.
So, you know, he had that Key of David talking about all these different ways that China's overtaking us. I mean, you brought about the way that they're cheating and stealing to do it. But in that same show, and he also brought out an important biblical truth. If you want to play clip two, George.
Over the years, I think everybody knows that China and the U.S. have been clashing, and it's really not a good relationship. And I want to talk to you about that China-America clash and show you that that clash is prophesied specifically in your Bible. It is that important that God includes it in Bible prophecy. And it's strikingly clear.
So with that introduction, it's important, it's strikingly clear. What is the biblical perspective on what we see happening with China?
Yes, that is a powerful introduction there. And Mr. Fleury has also discussed this in the booklet that I mentioned at the start of this segment. It's called China's Dangerous Move Against America. In that, he discusses several different Bible prophecies that are relevant to this, just showing China growing more and more powerful and more belligerent and more anti-American, as we just heard in the clip there, just on this collision course with the U.S. One of the big passages that he focuses on is Isaiah 23. This shows China working with other nations to actually besiege the United States in the near future. And Mr. Fleury shows that that's basically how World War III will begin. So I think it's alarming enough to see the Chinese Communist Party's, you know, military buildup and its increasing aggression and its economic theft on their own. But when you add all of that to these prophecies showing what China plans to do very soon with all of that military might and economic might, then the picture is truly disturbing. So I hope that anyone who doesn't have a copy of it will order his booklet, China's Dangerous Move Against America, just to better understand those prophecies.
And we're offering you, a lot of little books today. Not massive, thick tomes of demanding reading, which, you know, we definitely have those and they're definitely worth digging into. But Character in Crisis, China's Most Dangerous Move Against America, these are pretty thin little books, easy to dip into. And you can go on our website, thetrumpet.com, and order those, or you know, you can use the website to get in touch with us as well. You can shoot us an email, trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com, if you have any difficulty in doing that. And you can read them online. We're also very happy to post you your own free print copy so that you can study it and study it alongside your Bible and be able to close the lid on the laptop and do that without distractions and really dig into that. So before we give Simon his long-awaited chance on the Middle East, do you have any other Asian stories you wanted to go over with us today, Jeremiah?
Yes, yeah, just a couple of short ones. First up, a quick story about BRICS. This is the economic group of nations that is named after its first five members: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, BRICS. And BRICS is an anti-Western grouping. They detest the United States and they want to find ways to work against it and against the dollar specifically. And last year they brought in four more members. Those were Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, and the United Arab Emirates. And now this week they took in nine more countries. Now, this time, these are not full members. They're only observer partner countries. But nevertheless, the list of them is quite impressive. It is Belarus, Bolivia, Cuba, Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Thailand, Uganda, and Uzbekistan. Those are all now observer partners to BRICS as of this week. So it means BRICS is growing. And even though BRICS at present has little cohesion and no real mechanism for trade, much less any sort of military mechanism, we could see it grow more unified and relevant in the years ahead. And since it is so staunchly anti-American, that could have some serious implications for the U.S. So there's a lot to keep an eye on there. And then another quick story here about South Korea. A new First Post report says 73% of South Koreans now want their nation to build a nuclear arsenal. South Korea is a treaty ally to the United States, so it has always refrained from going nuclear since America is supposed to step in and help it if it's ever attacked, and since the U.S. is supposed to keep South Korea safe under America's nuclear umbrella. But the South Koreans were utterly horrified to see America's shameful withdrawal from Afghanistan a couple of years back. They've also been terrified to see Ukraine, which America promised to defend, being brutalized and not assisted to a degree that allows it to stop the invasion. South Koreans are also worried about the return of President Trump. Mr. Trump has often bristled about the burden-sharing agreement with South Korea during his first term. He renegotiated terms to make sure that the South Koreans were paying more, and he keeps on arguing that South Korea should still be paying more. So all of this hangs a large question mark over America's reliability and its commitment. And now this new report shows that 73% of South Koreans are saying, you know what, we don't really know what America will do. So let's build our own nuclear arsenal. That's the only way we can keep from being attacked by another nuclear armed nation. So we could see another country join the nuclear weapons club very soon. Right now, that's a very exclusive club. Only 9 countries are in it, but South Korea could soon join. There are also whispers in Japan and Saudi Arabia about going nuclear. And of course, Iran is very close to the bomb as well. So the overall trend is alarming. And I think that it shows that the unthinkable may not be as far off as many of us would like to think.
And I think the prospect of a South Korean bomb has become a whole lot more troublesome, worrying, scary even this week and over the last few months than it was before then. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the latest from South Korea this morning, where the president's been impeached. They're sending in the police to try and arrest the president. The president is using his own guard and the military to hold the police off so they can't arrest him. Like, it's the kind of stuff that you expect to be going on in some African country as you have succession disputes and things. And I guess we talked before about South Korea and democratic backsliding, and you've got what seems like an established, mature democracy kind of falling apart. I guess looking into that a little more after we had that discussion, it isn't too long since they've had kind of major issues and presidents impeached and overthrown and things like that. I think in many ways the takeaway is they're not the mature, established democracy that they look like. So how much can a country like that secure a nuclear bomb? Secure it against unauthorized use? Then, of course, there's a whole other set of very historically ominous considerations when it comes to Japan. I don't want to go too much down this route. There's a long discussion that we can have on nuclear proliferation. But I mean, certainly you can see as these bombs spread to different countries, there's a lot of dangers that go with that. Well, thank you for that, Jeremiah. We do have a few minutes to get a bit of an update from Mihailo Simon Zekig on the Middle East, and we'll get in a little more from Europe. But go ahead, Mihailo.
Sure, thanks. On Wednesday, the big story from the Middle East I noticed was that the Palestinian Authority banned Al Jazeera from operating in the West Bank. Palestinian Authority being, of course, a semi-autonomous proto-government that rules over part of the, what some people would call the occupied territories next to Israel, and Al Jazeera being officially on paper like this vibrant, mature newspaper, when it's more or less a mouthpiece of the Qatari government. They've done a lot to clean up their image and make themselves look more like some of the more mainstream papers we have in the West, but they still have heavy connections to the government there and basically used by the government to publish their own image, mainly among throughout the Arab world, to stir up more Islamic extremism, to be blunt, but also to help whitewash the Qatari government's notorious human rights policies and whatever in the West. That the Palestinian, this isn't anything new per se. A lot of countries have banned them. Israel banned them last spring. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, some of these other Arab countries have banned them because they don't want Al Jazeera stirring trouble. For the Palestinian Authority to ban them, that's basically like the DNC telling the Washington Post are no longer welcome on their territory. Like, if you've ever gone onto Al Jazeera's website and clicked on the Middle East button, basically all you would see from like virtual miles is that Israel's evil, why don't we have a Palestinian state, and the Palestinian Authority is normally the biggest benefactor of that kind of press because it gives them more international legitimacy to do what their goals are. Why are they banning them? Well, according to the PA, they're saying that the Al Jazeera has been giving misleading information for a while, and the ban is you could say, and it's temporary, etc. But it all revolves around that siege that the PA is doing in Jenin that we talked about a few weeks ago. And Al Jazeera was actually banned from operating in that area of the West Bank last month, and apparently that's not hasn't stopped them from still poking the bear. So now President Mahmoud Abbas there has banned them throughout the whole thing. This is what Al Jazeera's own correspondent said about the PA's ban.
However, it's important to note that the Palestinian Authority previously banned Al Jazeera from reporting in Jenin back on December 24th. And that is because of the coverage on the Palestinian Authority raids on resistance fighters in the occupied West Bank. The PA has been conducting its own raids that are separate from Israeli forces. We're used to the Israeli military conducting raids on armed Palestinian fighters in the West Bank, but the Palestinian Authority has stepped up those raids in the last 4 weeks. And because journalists have been reporting on that, the Palestinian Authority decided to take measures of its own. It's important to note that the Palestinian Authority, though, is not so popular amongst the people that it is supposed to govern. And these crackdowns in places like Jenin have killed several Palestinians, and just a few days ago actually killing one Palestinian woman who was a journalist while she was walking in Jenin.
So, I mean, the Palestinian Authority, notoriously corrupt. Mahmoud Abbas, what has he been temporarily in power for a four-year term for...
like 15 years, something like that.
Yeah, I was going to guess 2 decades. Like, he's been... This is just a case of a corrupt, undemocratic government. They just don't want a... I was going to say free press. Al Jazeera is not really a free press. They don't want any kind of press oversight reporting on what they're up to.
Well, that kind of coverage there is exactly the reason why they meant... They said resistance fighters. They're talking about... Those particular resistance fighters they're talking about are Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Those are the guys that are running the show in Jenin. And like we covered before on this program, it's been a long time coming for somebody to basically snuff out this terrorist, festering, anarchic compound that any other country in the world, if they had, that wouldn't tolerate. But Qatar is one of the biggest supporters of those kinds of groups. They have given hundreds of millions to Hamas over the years. And that is... Like, that's why all these other Arab countries banned them as well. They're actively trying to whitewash Hamas and make, as you just saw, like the PA, again, they're corrupt, they've done a lot of things, but, you know, even they're illegitimate compared to the real resistance fighters, etc. Al Jazeera is not a unbiased source of news trying to show you what's going on in the world. They are, you could arguably say, probably the most effective propaganda outlet in the world. Now, going back to the PA, again, they've more or less tolerated Hamas operating under the current there for a long time. For them to not only go after Hamas in these strongholds like Jenin, but even blacklist their main international supporter, or at least their most visible international supporter, that's something Israel would have liked for them to do back in the 1990s, that kind of thing.
It's also probably something they wouldn't have, like, they couldn't have done. Or they, like, now it seems like they've, Hamas, Fatah, and Hamas, Palestinian Authority and Hamas, they've hated each other for a long time. Like, they hate Israel more, and they'll set that aside sometimes, but it does seem like now that Hamas is down, is this the Palestinian Authority, they see a chance to get... You know, there were fears that Hamas would take over the West Bank. Now they have an opportunity to make sure that they keep their job and that their Islamist rivals don't take power.
That is... as well, but what's interesting is that in Jenin, the main group they're fighting is supposedly called the Jenin Brigade, which is an umbrella group that Hamas and all his groups fight under. It also includes the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which was Fatah's militant wing. There's a bit of debate as to how much they're connected these days, but Fatah is basically literally fighting among Hamas and all these guys, also their own soldiers, or at least what they formerly were, their own soldiers, which is quite the turnaround from what we've seen from the Palestinian Authority basically since its inception. Again, why are they doing this right now? There's a recent Fatah official that told the New York Post that once Trump comes back and he's going to finish Hamas, etc., and it could very well be part of, you know, them trying to snuff out a rival. But also, once Trump comes back, and the war in Gaza is probably going to be over very soon, and there's a lot of questions as to whether the Palestinian authorities, they're even going to give them a chance to try and rule that again, or if there's going to even be a Palestinian authority coming down the road when people have seen how ineffective it's been and weak and corrupt at best for the last couple of decades. And so I think you are seeing the Palestinian Authority take a lot more measures to try and clean up its image, to make itself look a lot more palatable to Western audiences, to potentially, say, run in Gaza or get its foothold in the West Bank more established. But either way, this is almost certainly among, as you said, trying to snuff out a rival, a a projection to the outside world that we're on the side of the good guys and it's our turn to have a slice of the pie.
And that appeal to Western partners, that is Western partners working with the Palestinians, that's something we're watching for.
Indeed. Specifically, not as much America and Israel, although obviously with the Biden administration and Barack Obama pulling the strings, there's obviously a big incentive for them to power the Palestinians at expense of Israel. But specifically, we're watching for the Palestinians one way or another, through one group or another, to turn to Europe and Germany. And the pertinent prophecy for that, that Editor-in-Chief has gone to time and time again for these kinds of events, is Psalm 83. The first opening verses talk about a group of countries coming together to attack God's people, to attack the physical nations of Israel, among others, and that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. That's specifically how verse 4 is stated. And verse 6 to 8 talks about which countries are included in there. It's a long list. You could look at them and see through the Bible, through secular history, that no group of this nation, either this composition or this purpose, have ever come to pass, which is why Mr. Fleury says it's a prophecy. The end of verse 8 talks about Asher, or the Assyrians, the ancestral people of Germany, and specifically it talks about the Philistines. And in his free book, The King of the South, Mr. Fleury said this includes the Palestinians of Gaza and even the West Bank. To this point, they've been mostly under control of Iran through Hamas, through especially Gaza, of course, but through Palestinian Islamic Jihad, some of these other groups, and that relates to another prophecy we talk to often about, Daniel 11, verse 40. And as Mr. Fleury has elaborated, that alliance is against Germany. So something's going to happen to split the Palestinians from Iran over to Germany, over to Europe, over to the West, if I could use that umbrella term. It likely wasn't going to happen under Hamas government, but Fatah has been, especially to the European Union, their baby pet project of sending all these euros over to try and build them up, make them look like, you know, the future of democracy and peace in the Middle East, etc. Even when I was in Israel a little bit doing some helping out with cleaning out the Armstrong Institute of Biblical Archaeology's new office, our affiliate. I was doing some cleaning out of old storage stuff, and I even found papers of the EU sending money to Palestinians, like among archives, like that the former owners of the building or some other group were affiliated with. They have a huge presence with the Palestinians, and ideally, a cleaned up Palestinian Authority would be their dream partner, and it looks like Abbas might be trying to make that dream a reality.
And that ties in nicely to one of the stories I wanted to talk about from Europe, and that is that Syria is another of these countries that is prophesied to shift over to Europe. And I did a breakdown of that on a short segment that talked about the Psalm 83 alliance, and that takes you through, well, why is this psalm Bible prophecy? How can you prove that? How can you prove that this is talking about the Syrians or the Palestinians? That segment was focused more on the Syrians, but you can go and you can see that on our YouTube or our Rumble channel. But last Thursday or last Friday, you had Ahmed al-Shara, I think it was Friday, over the weekend, this de facto leader of Syria. He said, well, you know, we think it's going to take us about 4 years to get round to holding elections. So I think that shows this is Syria's future. They're not in a rush to embody a Western-style democracy. They won't be embracing of their own version of the U.S. Constitution. He sees a shot at being Syria's next strongman. Now, whether he is able to keep that remains to be seen. But that's where he is there. And then you look at Europe, and today the German and French foreign ministers were sitting down with Ahmed al-Shara, and they're very positive, very enthusiastic, very hopeful that they can do some deals here. The German foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, she said, "My trip today, together with my French counterpart on behalf of the EU, is a clear signal to the Syrians. A new political beginning between Europe and Syria, between Germany and Syria, is possible." I mean, this is what we've been forecasting for years. This is what Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury wrote in his 2012 article, How the Syrian Crisis Will End. That it would end with a new beginning, with Syria broken from Iran and having this kind of relationship with Germany. And that's the subject of our latest Trumpet print magazine, which we send out roughly once a month. And you can receive that and, again, study that, go through that. Mr. Flowey's article there was called Syria's Fall, Another Key Prophecy Fulfilled. Did you have any other articles you wanted to bring up from the Middle East, Mihaila?
Well, that was one of the stories, so you pulled the rug from under my feet there. But one other one I mentioned is that last night, the Houthi rebels in Yemen sent a missile and a drone into Israel. The drone was intercepted before it reached Israeli airspace. The missile actually made it in and was subsequently taken out by air defense forces. Nobody was killed or injured by the missile itself, although apparently some people were injured as they were like in this evacuation procedures, etc. And you've seen a lot more of these escalations, more of these missile attacks and drone attacks from the Houthis, including those that go actually get into Israel itself, and in some cases even hit their intended targets, along with Israel taking more and more action attacking Yemen itself. I don't believe we mentioned this last week, but they did a massive bombing raid on Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, last week, which apparently almost hit Tedros Ghebreyesus, the World Health Organization guy who was in Yemen at the time, which, I mean, thankfully he didn't get killed, but at the same time, it would have been interesting to see what would have happened if in circumstances played out a little bit differently. But the Houthis at this point are basically the only proxy Iran has left in the fight against Israel. Hezbollah has been decapitated. Hamas is on its last legs. Iraq is watching what's happening in Syria. They don't have a dog in the fight anymore with Israel. And the Houthis have a lot of sophisticated weapons, but they're also very far away from Israel. And so it would be interesting to see what happens going forward with that conflict.
All right, well, thank you for that, Mihaila. I'll just squeeze in one last story from Europe that I think is worth making a note of. I mean, if you're looking at the two big trends that we're watching for Europe, we're watching for Europe to align with Syria. We're watching for this rise of a strong German leader. And Austria just today had their attempt to come up with any kind of leader for themselves fall apart. They had their elections back in September. This was their best shot at getting a coalition government together, and they failed. So they've had the mainstream left party, the mainstream right, and then this other party, the Neos. They've been coming together to try and form a coalition, and it's taking three parties because it was the far-right Freedom Party that won the election back in September. And they don't want to let that far-right Freedom Party lead the government. But the only way they can keep them out of power is by having quite a complicated three-way coalition. And it didn't work. It fell apart. And this has been something that Herbert W. Armstrong talked about for years, something Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has talked about for years, that you're going to have the rise of a strong man in Europe. And I think we went through it on the show last week, that he's going to come into power through unorthodox means. And you're going to have this kind of democratic deadlock so that you have to parachute him in by some other way. And we're seeing that trend all across Europe. And Austria is a powerful example of that. So that is something that is worth watching. Well, all of the stories that we've talked about on this show are worth watching. And there's three little books that we have, I think, drawn particular attention to. Character in Crisis, China's Most Dangerous Move Against America, and then The King of the South will take you through what we're all just talking about with Mihailo just now. Those are all three relatively short little booklets. The King of the South may be a little bit longer, but you can get those on our website, thetrumpet.com. Again, we're very happy for you to read them there. We're very happy to send them to you wherever you are in the world. So if you head over there, or if you get in touch with us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com, and we can put those on order for you. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to all of our panel. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production. And we've really kept him on his toes, I think, a lot more this week than we did last week. But he's kept up with all the buttons over there in the control booth. We will be back with our regular pre-recorded show on Wednesday. And until then, keep watching your world.